Hello, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We're the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And today we're doing the final episode of Season 7, Come On Over for Dinner, where I will be leading and Joel is going to be giving his trivia.
Yes, it's the final episode of Season 7 and the first episode in our new house.
Yeah, hopefully the audio sounds okay.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It's a bit echoey in here because, you know, we're still in the middle of unpacking, but there won't be any annoying neighbor noises.
True. That's more of a problem of us having to stop recording. They won't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So, do you have any trivia to start us off with?
Of course I do. So, this episode was directed by Larry Shaw and written by Bob Daly, and it aired on the 15th of May, 2011. At the time of recording, it's also Mark Cherry's birthday.
Oh, really?
So, happy birthday to Mark Cherry.
How old is he?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not going to announce his age.
Why?
I don't know. Anyway, so the title of this episode comes from the lyrics of the song Company from the musical of the same name. In the US, this episode aired alongside episode 22. However, in the UK, it actually aired 1 week after on E4, and its UK air date was the 3rd of July.
Okay.
So Mark Cherry, who's obviously the series creator, was originally planning to end his run on the show after this episode, as he had begun work on another series for ABC. However, ABC did not pick up his new show, and so Cherry decided to stay on with Desperate Housewives for another season. The episode was watched by 10.27 million viewers, making it the least viewed season finale in the series run, and received a 3.1 rating in the key demographic, as well as gaining mixed reviews from critics, yet overwhelmingly positive opinions from fans. Christian Blovelt, who's the recapper and reviewer for EW, praised the ending of the episode and the season and the possibilities it offered for season 8, saying, "The fact that all the housewives are going to be involved as partners in crime in next year's caper instantly makes it more compelling than anything this show has given us in years. Finally, Desperate Housewives is getting back to basics, creating a mystery that utilizes the entire ensemble rather than splitting the cast into a web of barely connected, tangible story threads."
Yeah, I have to agree. He's correct, in my opinion.
He is, yeah. This episode marks the first time since the second season finale that executive producer Larry Shaw served as director for the very last episode in the season. And this is the 150th episode to feature Marsha Cross, who, due to a 7-episode absence in season 3 because of her maternity leave, is a bit behind on the rest of the cast. And the final scene may be a nod to Alfred Hitchcock. I can never pronounce his name properly without stopping and pausing. The final scene may be a nod to Alfred Hitchcock's Rope, where a dead body is hidden in a chest throughout an entire dinner party. And it also constitutes a nod to the mystery that started the series, with Deirdre Taylor's body being stuffed into a chest as well.
I actually made a few notes about how I thought it was similar to Rope when I watched the episode.
Yeah.
Before I looked anything up. So that was interesting. I guess it was a purposeful note.
Yeah. So this week, what happened this week? And by this week, I do mean the week of the 3rd of July, because obviously B's already done it last week. So trains in England are cancelled due to extreme heat.
Typical.
Yeah. Typical for the UK to just not be prepared for any form of weather.
There were leaves on the track.
Philip Morris International, who's the world's largest tobacco corporation, threatens to sue the Australian government in relation to its introduction of plain, brandless cigarette packaging.
Why?
Because then it's not going to be as eye-catching.
Oh.
So the cigarette company is suing Australia's government for the fact that they're now going to be making it harder for them to sell cigarettes.
What an evil company.
Yeah, I know. Lawmakers in the US state of Texas pass a healthcare bill imposing further restrictions on abortion. Now, the reason I put this in here is to just kind of politely show to everybody that all of this stuff that we're seeing in the news media now is not new.
Oh, yeah.
Myanmar deports and blacklists actress Michelle Yeoh, who is due to depict opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi in an upcoming movie.
Let her hit.
Right? Let her do what she wants. It's Michelle Yeoh.
Leave her be.
The crew of International Space Station rushed to a rescue shuttle amid concern of the need for a possible emergency evacuation back to Earth as a piece of space debris hurtles dangerously close.
Oh, I bet that was a movie.
18 children, 15 girls and 3 boys, are killed when lightning strikes a primary school in Masindi in the western region of Uganda.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of people go on strike across the United Kingdom in relation to worsening pension conditions being discussed by the government and opposition, while MPs from both the government and opposition condemn them for going on strike. Surprise, surprise.
And yet we've just recently had our pension age increased. Mm.
26 people are arrested while protesting their government's pension cuts in London as clashes and the controversial police tactic of kettling get underway. And this was banned in 2012. This was happened in 2011, and then in 2012, the sort of premise of the tactic of kettling was then banned. So the number one song in the US was Give Me Everything by Pitbull featuring Neo, Afrojack and Naya. And the number one song in the UK was Don't Want to Go Home by Jason Derulo.
Yeah, we've reached that time where all the number ones are just club songs.
Yeah, club music.
What a depressing time.
And the number one films for the US and the UK was Transformers Dark of the Moon.
What a crazy time to be alive. Just club songs and Transformer movies.
Oh God, and they were awful as well. Transformers really should have stopped after the second one. And that's all the trivia I have.
Fab. So depressing looking back at when these episodes were coming out and everything just was so stupid.
Yeah.
So previously, Susan was given back the keys to her house, so she finally is moving back to Wisteria Lane. Bree started dating Detective Chuck Vance, but they can't have sex until his divorce goes through. Lynette and Tom have a weekend away to save their relationship, but it only made it worse. And Gabby started getting stalked by her stepfather, previously presumed dead.
Yeah.
We're going to start with the opening. Everyone is getting ready for a dinner party on Wisteria Lane. Everyone would remember the drinks and the good food, but Mary Alice says the most memorable part wasn't the food. And we see shots of a rug being placed over what looks like a blood stain and someone washing off what looks like blood from their hands.
Yeah.
So that's quite a mysterious and ominous opening, isn't it?
It is, yes. A very mysterious opening.
Let's start with Susan. So we cut to 2 days earlier and Mary Alice says that in the year Susan has been away from the lane, she missed all of it, but mostly she missed her friends. She's unpacking with Mike, but is desperate to hang out with her friends, but Mike wants her to finish unpacking first. He says to at least do the kitchen, but he does let her go after to see her friends after seeing her kind of haphazardly empty a box of cutlery into a drawer, which is very Susan behaviour.
This is a serious mood, I'm not going to lie.
That's probably not even Susan rushing.
No, it's not. That is just Susan. Yeah, she's not even rushing. She's just legitimately unpacking.
Fine,
yeah,
you can go see your friends.
Considering that we've literally just moved right around the corner from two of my best friends, that's a real mood.
Yes, exactly. So she goes to Bree's house, then Lynette's, and then Gabby's. But because of all of the personal dramas that they have going on, especially in this episode, they all kind of fob her off and tell her they'll see her later. So she goes back home and Mike is surprised to see her back so soon. And Susan is clearly upset.
Yeah, and like...
she's taking it to heart.
It's like, girl, your friends will still be there tomorrow.
Also, look, the world doesn't revolve around you. I know that you're excited to be back on the lane, but this is why you say, I'm moving. When can we hang out? Let's do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, like, she's just like, I do miss my friends and now I'm sad because they have lives and can't drop everything for me. Like, oh my God, she's so insufferable.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but when you surprise show up to people, you have to expect that this could happen.
Mm.
So, sorry, Suzanne.
Plus... she's acting like she hasn't seen them in years. You were there every week. Like you saw them every week still.
Yeah, you were only just on this lane, nearly getting murdered.
Yeah, like, so relax, girl.
Later, the ladies, including Renee, all go over to Susan's to say hi, and they apologize for fobbing her off, except for Renee, who mentions that she was home all day and no one rang her doorbell.
Call her out, Renee. Call the bitch out.
Now, her saying that breaks the tension, so Susan offers everyone coffee.
Yeah.
Poor Renee.
It really annoys me, though, that Lynette says, we should have made time, especially after everything you've been through. No, bitch.
Well, yeah, but she didn't give you a time to make?
Yeah, like, you saw her all the time. Stop giving her sympathy that she wants. It's ugly and she needs to work on that.
Also, it's not really much of a surprise that she didn't knock on Renee's door, because they never really got along that well, except for that one time that they went for a dinner and Susan fainted because of her dodgy kidney.
Yeah, but they were sort of becoming friends, and then they just kind of... this is the problem with Renee as a character. The writers give Renee, like, half a story, or, like, half a character, and then they decide to move on to somebody else, and they don't follow it through.
Yeah, she's fun, but she's kind of a useless addition to the lane. She's kind of like a severely watered down Edie.
Yeah, exactly. They clearly felt like they needed that Edie atmosphere again. They needed to bring back that kind of character, but they weren't going whole hog with it like they did with Edie, so it just falls completely flat, which is a real shame because Renee is so much fun.
What a waste of Vanessa Williams.
It was such a, I feel really bad for Vanessa Williams because they fucked her over here.
But Renee's next, so we'll get to her.
Yeah.
Susan is telling the story of how she saved Paul's life and was nearly murdered by Felicia, but she's distracted because Renee's phone starts going off, ending the story. This situation with Renee's phone will be covered in Renee's story. We'll get to it.
Mm.
Bree then tells everyone that they're all throwing Susan, so they're throwing her a progressive welcome home to the lane party, which is where everyone makes food and drink in their own houses. And once you're done in one of the houses, you go over to the next one and, you know, you do their part of it and then you go to the next one. So obviously if you're involved and you're at one of these parties, you leave like 10 or 15 minutes early to go to your house to get set up for your bit or something. But it sounds just...
B doesn't like the idea.
It sounds really fun, but it also sounds like a bit of a ball ache. Like, oh, I'm just going to walk over to the next house. Oh, I'm just going to walk. Although, it'd be nice in the summer.
It's because they're next door.
Yeah.
So it's fine. Like, it's not like it's on the other side of town. And I'm like, ugh, now I've got to jump in a taxi and go to someone else's house. Like, no, it's, yeah, no.
Definitely nice in the summer, though, isn't it?
It's not a UK thing. Let's just say that here and now. We don't have the space. We don't have the beauty.
We don't talk to our neighbours.
Yeah, we really don't. It's not a British thing.
But it could be fun. Everyone's got their own little niche.
Yeah.
Their own little thing that they cook or serve. Quite a bit later, three or four houses into the party or so, so we're skipping way ahead in the whole story. We're at Bree's house and Susan gives a speech to thank everyone for the party, laughing at the fact that Bree burnt the main course for the first time. We'll get to that. And she toasts to her friends as she gets emotional, thus ending Susan's overall story.
In Susan's speech, she makes a joke about Brie burning the main course, which was a perfect tribute to her.
Yeah.
But I thought she could cook now.
The whole Susan cooking story is such a mindfuck for me. I don't get it. Why can Susan cook? Why is she cooking all these meals for Paul?
Why can she cook? And then why can't she cook? And then why can she cook? And then she can't again. And like, she's baking all of these. She literally baked cookies for the school, or for Paul originally, but gave them to the school. So obviously she can bake cookies. But in the season when Bob and Lee move onto the lane, she buys cookies and says to Lee, I wouldn't bake you cookies. Like, baking you cookies would just be an insult to you.
It's nuts. The whole story was nuts.
It's so insulting to an audience for you to just write somebody like this and be like, oh yeah, fuck it, that character trait of hers can go right out the window. Oh, but let's bring it back for the comedy purpose. It's so insulting to the audience.
I have a suggestion for how the last few episodes of season 7 should have played out. So this is what should have happened. Susan does start cooking for Paul to make him feel better. He keeps not eating the food because she's such a bad cook. Felicia's getting more and more annoyed because Paul just isn't getting worse and isn't dying, resulting to her going to the house, tying him to the chair, and doing all of the bits that happened in the last episode.
That's hilarious.
Wouldn't that have made so much more sense? She's like, I am putting so much fucking antifreeze in this food. Why is he not dying?
That's absolutely hilarious that Felicia would just resort to just doing it herself.
Right, like, she snaps. Sake.
Yeah.
Why did that not happen? And then all of the beats are the same. The characters still have their definers and their traits.
Oh. But it wouldn't bleed into Susan trying to get her job at the school back.
No, you can still have her make the cookies. And the mum's like, oh, it's all we have. Okay. So let's move on to Renee's story. We're at Susan's house and Susan is telling the ladies the story of how she saved Paul and was nearly murdered by Felicia. And Renee's phone goes off. So she ignores it and tells the ladies that it's her ex, Doug, probably bored of his new girlfriend and wanting to hook up, but she's not going to go back to him.
To be fair, most people that get a call from their ex usually would assume that it's a booty call or something, right?
Yeah, like I'm on Renee's side. I see why she thinks that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Later, she's lighting candles and preparing for the party when one of the men that she's hired, who is the bartender, asks about Doug because he finds a picture of them together. But she tells him to shut up. Bob and Lee then walk in, and after some introductions, Bob says it's good to see her holding up so well.
Mm.
And apparently he said this because on TV, they said that Doug is remarrying. So this leads to Renee to start drinking whiskey at the bar.
I guess it was nice of him to try and give her the heads up. And maybe that is the done thing in show business or, like, celebrity world. Considering that, like, in the real world, for lack of a better term, I wouldn't call my ex and be like, yeah, just FYI, I'm getting married.
Yeah, especially when they didn't exactly end on good terms.
No, because, yeah, they didn't end on good terms. And then he came back and asked her.
Didn't she sleep with his lawyer to get more money or something? Didn't she imply that she did
that?
Yeah,
well, she did do that. Yeah, and he came back and they tried to make things work again until Gabby said, oh, by the way, she slept with your lawyer.
Yeah.
And then she punched Gabby in the face.
Yeah, iconic.
So, yeah, so it didn't end very well. So I am surprised, but I guess that's the done thing in the celebrity world.
So Gabby shows up to the party and more people have also arrived. And apparently Renee's had a little bit too much to drink. And she finds that everyone is watching her as she sits on the piano, and we have a clip.
Not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine. Stay. Each day is Valentine's Day. More from the top.
No. My funny Valentine. Not so funny the fourth time around.
I think the fans all knew that it was going to be that clip, right?
Yeah. And Lee is so shady. See, all you people that love Lee, he let Vanessa Williams do that four times before right. He then stood up and was like, no, it's not funny the fourth time around. Like,
yeah, because, I mean, with what you just said there, it's quite fun to see the different reactions from people. So it's clearly awkward for some people, like Susan, but it's clearly funny to others, like Karen.
Yeah, Karen and Mike are like cracking up at the front door. Like, just everyone's faces when she struggles to hit that long stay, you know, like, is so rude. The disrespect that they're giving Miss Vanessa Colours of the Wind Williams.
Yeah, if any of you missed the trivia from when she entered this season, she is a bloody singer.
She is a singer, and I'm sorry, but she's probably the only one in the cast that really can sing. Like, yeah. Really can sing.
Colours of the Wind, yeah. Save the Best for Last, yeah. Hello.
Everybody
this is
else,
such a dirty storyline.
Everybody else in the show might, or other people in the show might be able to, you know, hold a note, but Ms. Vanessa Williams can sing, bitch, and you're giving her this?
Yeah, it's very funny.
This is what happens when you mix red wine and white wine.
Or in her case, wine and whiskey.
Yeah, oh, true. Hell. Well, I thought it was red and white wine.
Well, she was drinking whiskey at the bar
was
earlier, wasn't she?
She was drinking whiskey at the bar. That's it. It wasn't a mixture of red and white wine. Because he said red or white and she said brown. And I just kind of assumed, oh, okay.
Oh, maybe she didn't have any wine then.
But no, you're right. Yeah, I don't think she did have wine.
Because
she got very whiskey drunk.
A lot of whiskey, that's hard. So Lee then tells her that Doug sucks and that she'll find someone else, but Renee isn't convinced and she thinks that all the good ones are either married or gay.
Oh, you're so sweet. I was talking about Barb.
Iconic. Later, at Lynette's house, everyone thinks that Renee is too upset to come, but she actually walks in with the bartender that she told to shut up earlier, with their arms around each other's shoulders, and introduces him to everyone as her date.
He's also an actor.
He's a bartender / model.
Oh, that's the one, model.
He's been in an advert for watches, and he shows off how he sort of like looked at the watch in the advert, like doing a little pose, with everyone looking, I would say, unimpressed.
It's like, he really wants to know what time it is.
They then just make out sloppily in front of everyone.
Drunk, lonely, desperate Renee is so much fun.
Like, she really is.
So much fun to like, she just brings such joy to this party.
Yeah, they were just having fun with Renee here.
Yeah.
At the next house, Renee and the bartender are now just annoying everyone by trying to tell them how they met. With Karen pointing out that they were all there when they met each other an hour ago.
Yeah.
Which is very funny but incorrect. Leading to Lee pulling Renee to one side for a chat. Renee is clearly delusional here as she can already see them getting married, but has to run away from Lee when she realizes that she doesn't even know the bartender's last name.
Okay, I will give props where props are due, and I respect Lee here for doing the best friend thing and pulling his friend to the side and being like, girl, you are pathetic. Sort your shit out.
Like, pull it together.
Pull it together, girl. Like, slap, slap. Sort it.
Yeah, sometimes when your friend is in an emotional state and they're doing stupid things, you need to just pull them aside and give them a metaphorical, sometimes physical slap around the face and just say, pull it together. Yeah. Enough is enough.
So, but also at the same time, Lee, leave her be.
Let her hit.
It's so much fun. Let her hit. It's so much fun.
It's messy is what it is.
It is.
It's a fun mess. So everyone is leaving the Nets to go to Breeze for the main course. And the bartender does the watch bit again, which is now just annoying Renee, or winding her up, if you will.
I guess it's that time. For fuck's sake, dude.
He says he's confused as she used to love it. But she says that people change and it's like they're going for an entire relationship in the space of a few hours.
Also, bravo for that wind-up one.
Thank you. I worked really hard on that. No, I didn't really.
I would say this is... I think we are safe to say that we can give Renee the award for shortest relationship in the show.
I don't even know if it counts as a relationship, but they go through all the steps of one.
They really do.
She got sick of this himbo without a thought in his brain so quickly.
Yeah.
Poor guy. At Breeze, Renee pours another wine and the bartender starts to complain about Renee's drinking, so she decides to end things. He seems surprised that he's getting dumped and Renee says, it's not you, it's me, but it's mostly you.
It's mostly you.
And she does a walkout.
Yeah.
She finds Lynette in the kitchen and tells her about her failed relationship with the bartender and and it all goes back to Doug. And then Lynette starts crying. So Renee asks what's wrong, and Lynette tells her that her and Tom are separating.
God, Lynette, way to make it all about you.
She does do that.
She really does. Like, Renee's like, oh, who am I kidding? This is all about Doug, and I really thought that when he broke up, it was that he didn't want to get married, but it turns out he just doesn't want to marry me. And so Renee's very quite hurt in the fact that actually her relationship breaking down was more about her than about the concept of her relationship.
Yeah.
And then Lynette's like, my marriage.
It's the same thing as, I think it was last season, when Tom was getting annoyed that Lynette never says nice things about him, and he's hurt by it. And then she's like, what about me?
That is very
Everyone
true.
Everyone thinks I'm the bitch. Yeah, and then he comforts her, and that's how the episode ends. And we were like,
That was so confusing.
I don't think that was the problem here.
Yeah, but I do love how Renee... I love Renee's no.
Yeah, she's shooketh.
Like, she's shook, she's gagged, she's gooped, she's all of that. Like, she didn't have a front row seat to the entire build-up, and she couldn't see it happening. Like, right, it was like Renee sat there and watched the accident in slow motion, and then when someone comes up to her and says, oh, there's just been an accident, she goes, what?
I think she's like the fans, because this is the first marriage on the show that we've seen the disillusionment of from the main cast, because we saw Bree and Rex's, but we never saw the relationship before that, so that was just the norm for us.
That
we didn't
true.
See Mike and Susan because it happened in between seasons.
Yeah.
And Gabby and Carlos, that's all we knew of them. This is the first long time proper marriage that we've seen break down. So even the fans were probably like, no,
I think
it's the only
fans,
one left.
I think a lot of the fans were like that because Tom and Renee had been so consistent. They were like,
you mean Tom and Lynette?
That's what I said.
You said Tom and Renee.
Oh, okay, whatever. Tom and Lynette have been so consistent, and that was the only real consistency within the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are right. It's the biggest one that we've seen the disillusion of. They've had struggles. That's the thing. Tom and Lynette, unlike the other couples, have had struggles and they've fought through them. They had Rick, they had cancer, they had a loss of a business.
A house collapsing on the whole family. Like,
yeah,
Lynette's gone through it.
She has gone through it. Gunpoint, held at gunpoint, a random kid showing up that, you know, wasn't Lynette's.
Didn't she get shot in the arm?
Lynette did get shot in the arm, yeah.
Rough.
She got held at gunpoint twice. So she is... They've been through shit and they've always made it work. Every other couple have hit rough patches and it's usually meant the end of their relationship. Susan and Mike.
God, the show's
Bree and Rex.
Nuts.
Bree and Orson. Carlos and Gabby. Carlos and Victor. Well, not Carlos and Victor.
I don't know what you're talking
Gabby
about.
Gabby and Victor.
Oh, Gabby and Victor. Right. Okay. I know now. Now let's go on to Bree. Bree gets home from a run with Chuck and it seems like she was very much able to keep up, if not ahead of him.
Despite the fact that she does not look like she's just been for a run.
Yeah.
Chuck looks like sweaty and he's like glistening with sweat and his hair's a mess. And Bree looks great.
That's because Bree is not a real person. She is just the symbolic representation of a lady.
Yeah. Who'd have
ladies
guessed that?
Ladies do not perspire.
Who'd have guessed that working out would turn men on?
Probably everyone. A few kisses and sweet talks later, they decide to shower together before Bree is distracted by the doorbell. Susan is at the door and wants to say hi after returning to the lane, but Bree fobs her off to go for shower sex. Chuck, however, takes this as a sign that they need to slow things down and convinces Bree to wait until the divorce is settled tomorrow. It is mentioned here that it should go smoothly if his wife is in a good mood, and he mentions that she has a struggling clothes store, so it kind of just depends on what mood she's in.
Yeah.
Which will come up.
I'm sure when Susan finds out that Bree blew her off for sex, she'll understand.
No, she won't.
I'm sure most friends...
She's very dramatic.
I think most friends would understand if they're blown off for sex. But also,
especially with Chuck.
Chuck says to Bree, like, I think that was a sign from God that we need to slow down or hold our horses. And Bree goes, I don't think it was. And in fact, I think I know him better than you do.
Yeah, I really like that line.
I really liked that. I thought it was so fun. But why does Chuck's wife have to find out that he's banged Bree anyway? It's not like he's obligated to announce it.
She doesn't. He needs to keep this to himself, but he's probably being watched.
It's moral. It's a moral thing, let's face it. You know, for Chuck, it's a morality thing, which
but it's
is
also,
fine and respectable.
It also is to make the legal proceedings easier.
Yeah.
So later, after all of the ladies see Susan at her house to welcome her back, she asks Renee, as in Bree, asks Renee, if she'll come with her to check out Chuck's ex-wife's clothes shop under the guise of buying new dresses for Susan's welcome home party. When they get there, they realise that the clothes aren't exactly dinner party material, but she needs the woman in a good mood for the divorce tomorrow, so her and Renee start complimenting everything. The ex-wife's name is Maureen, by the way, so yeah. I'm just going to call her Maureen from now on.
Yeah.
So she picks up a bunch of random stuff to buy, but Maureen says that she should try them on first, and we get to see Bree wearing the most random assortment of clothing. She claims to love it all, but then mistakenly thanks her and calls her by her name, letting it slip that she's here to check up on the ex-wife. Bree explains the situation further and says that her and Chuck aren't sleeping together because he's a stand-up guy and hopes that him and Maureen can settle things soon. Wow, saying Maureen quickly is really weird.
Maureen.
Which she promises that they will. They then leave and we see Maureen phone Arthur, presumably her lawyer, telling him to tear up the agreement that they just signed and that they can do better.
I love fashion forward. I mean, I'm always looking at places which do clothing that's a bit out of the norm because, like, your basic top manner of Ryland just doesn't cut it for me anymore. And also, they're just terrible ethically.
Uh-huh.
But even this is a bit too, like, kitschy or tacky or I don't know. But it feels a bit late noughties emo.
I don't even know what I'd call this. Some of this stuff is just nuts.
It was like a glittery skull purse and a studded bracelet. That's so noughties emo. That's the shit that you could get from Claire's or Primark back in the day. Like, oh, God, girl, bye. If we did a worst outfit award, it would go to the outfit that Brie was wearing when she left.
Oh, best and worst outfit. Damn, what a throwback.
Yeah, I know. Also in this scene, Brie says Chuck has high ethical standards. Just remember that.
Oh, well, I don't think. I mean, if he had high ethical standards, would he have looked her up on the police system?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Would he have pretended to be gay just to go to a club?
Well, that's his job.
I know.
That's a weird sentence. My job was to pretend to be gay. So Bree's at the party when Chuck shows up, and she says everyone's looking forward to meeting him, but he needs a drink first because he's just been going through all the divorce stuff with Maureen and the lawyers, and apparently she wants more. She apparently thinks that he's desperate to end things, and so she thinks she can ask for anything.
Like, now, she's now just caused Chuck to lose a hell of a lot more in this divorce. Like, the lake house. She wants the lake house, and she wants more money, and like, oh, Bree, for fuck's sake, girl.
Part of me is like, no one deserves an extra house, so fuck it. Fuck him.
Yeah.
But that's just because I don't really like Chuck very much, so I'm being a bit biased, really.
Oh, well, yeah.
So Bree goes outside to talk to Chuck, but finds him on the phone with Maureen, telling her to take whatever she wants. She tells him that he didn't have to do that, but he says he wouldn't want the memories of her all over the place anyway, and that he really wants to have sex with her, basically. So they decide to skip the next house and just go have sex instead.
But he gives her the lake house and tells her to keep the money. No, like, keep the money and give her the lake house.
Like, I know you want to end things so that you can bed Bree and you just want it over with, but this is nuts.
It's absolutely mental.
Like, don't give her the house, the lake house, and let her just have any money. Like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
You're not going to get anything out of this.
No. And also...
But then again, part of me is like, what did he do?
Mm-hmm. It's done very well here. The show have set up something very well here and thought very much...
Ahead?
They've thought ahead, basically, by having Chuck say hello to Alejandro. It's such a subtle thing. And as an audience member that hasn't seen season 8, you don't really register.
I didn't even write that down. I don't even remember that happening. It was so small.
They run to Bree's house, obviously, after they've had that chat that's just there.
Yeah.
And Alejandro is across the road, sort of like holding his hat and kind of covering his face a little bit, walking to Gabby's place. And Chuck says hello and Alejandro says good evening. And that's it.
Oh, well, I'll look out for that later when that comes up again, eventually.
So, like, thought ahead, very, very well done, because it's so subtle, and as an audience member that's watching it for the first time, you won't register it.
So, some sexy times later, and apparently the sex was very good, Bree is praising Chuck's performance when she notices that what the time is and that the chicken that she's made for the main course of this progressive party was supposed to be out of the oven by now. Apparently it was meant to be out of the oven 15 to 20 minutes ago, actually. We then hear the smoke alarms go off and Bree rushes out of bed. Sadly, the chicken is well and truly burnt. Yeah. Completely ruined. Smoke everywhere. They start to clear the smoke. Both of them only half-dressed, but the doorbell rings and, well, everyone's arrived, so they kind of just have to deal with it.
Yeah, they do.
They go out to the crowd of people in the lounge, so apparently they just let themselves in anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Still only half-dressed and tells everyone that the oven malfunctioned. Roy asks what happened to Chuck's shirt, and he claims that he took off the shirt to wave away the smoke, and he was doing it so vigorously that the buttons came off. They then leave to get more food, leaving the guests alone in the house. There was also a bit where Mike offers his shirt, and Lee's like, don't you fucking dare.
Yeah, I know. Even I was like, Mike, shut up. Like,
shut up, Mike.
Shut up, Mike. It's very kind of him. Don't get me wrong. Mike said, like, should I offer him a shirt? Very kind of you, Mike, but shut it.
Absolutely. The fuck not. We have a sting for when we see hot guys. We haven't played in ages. Should we play the sting for Shirtless Chuck?
We haven't played any stings for a very long time.
I know.
Because you're the one that's in charge of the editing.
I know, but it's just one of those things where it's like, let's play that sting, but we just haven't done it in a while. So this is for you, Chuck.
It's him. Oh, he's so sexy. Yes, sir.
Hello.
For the body.
That's been a while. He's, I think he's quite handsome. And that was the end of Bree's story.
Yeah.
Bree got laid.
She did. That was Bree's story, getting her laid.
Yeah, Bree's story for the past few episodes has just been trying to get laid.
Yeah.
So, let's move on to Lynette's story. Yeah, I know. It's a lot.
Mm.
Lynette and Tom are home from their weekend away, and Tom puts down his suitcase, just leaving it as it is. Lynette offers to unpack it, but Tom tells her to leave it, and that he's thinking of moving into a flat near the office to give them a bit of a break.
And straight away, Lynette's story opens up with depression.
Yes, depression.
They've really bled the sadness across from last episode for Tom and Lynette's story.
Lynette doesn't want this to happen because she's worried that if he leaves, he'll never come back. But then they get distracted by the front door, and it's Susan at the door who wants to say hi after returning to the lane. But Lynette tells her that she's in the middle of something and that she'll talk to her later, so she fobs her off.
Yeah.
Back to the conversation, she tells Tom that they can't give up fighting and that they have to save their marriage, but Tom thinks that they're not fighting to save anything and that they're just fighting.
Very valid point. Like, are we fighting to save our marriage or are we just fighting? And all Lynette can say is, it happens. That's yeah. all she can say to that. What happens? Like, that literally makes no sense.
I think she's struggling with the idea of it ending, but Tom, yeah, he does make a valid point. Which is surprising for mostly himbo Tom, to be honest. He made a very succinct point.
Yeah, he did. It's not usual for Tom. That's rather unusual, actually.
Yeah. His season 7 dream is for a divorce.
I think season 8 now, considering how his last episode. Lynette also says in this scene that they spent a 3-hour journey back and didn't say a single word.
I think she's being a bit overdramatic, but I get what she means.
And I was like, ew, how uncomfortable is that? Like, Jesus, gross.
I bet it was very relaxing for them. No, I'm joking. It was pretty very uncomfortable,
it's very uncomfortable.
Later, Lynette is preparing for the party, putting on her makeup with Penny, and she asks if Tom is dressed, but Penny says that he isn't back yet. So when Lynette asks where he is, she says she doesn't know, and that he left while Lynette was in the shower. She then goes into the bedroom to see that the suitcase is gone.
Behind her back.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Lynette shows up to the party alone, and when Gabby asks where he is, she says that he couldn't make it. Susan then says that Lynette should talk to Penny, as apparently she was talking to MJ, and Penny thinks that her parents are splitting up. Susan tries to assure Lynette that she spoke with Penny and told her not to worry, but Lynette then admits that Tom has left her.
Right, Susan, shut up. Don't tell Penny that.
That's really sad.
Susan was like, I told Penny not to worry. You two are the strongest people on the lane. That's never going to happen. And I'm like, now you're going to look like a jackass, Susan, when it does.
You could reframe this as Susan knowing what's just happened, and it would give very Martha Hooper energy.
Yeah, I know, it really would.
So they walk and talk outside, and Susan asks how she's holding up and tells her that she's going to get through this because she has her friends. Lovely, ugh, lovely, lovely.
Shut up, Susan. You're so annoying.
You're so mean to Susan today.
This episode, Susan is insufferable. It's nothing but my friends don't love me because they can't make the time for me. Don't worry, though. Your friends are here. You can get through anything. Shut up, girl.
You're starting to sound like me. When we started recording this show, I was on my Susan hate train.
Yeah, see, the difference between me and B is B hated Susan from the get-go. It always takes me to season 7, season 8 for me to really start to dislike Susan. She's just kind of annoyingly there. She's like an annoying mosquito in the first, like, the beginning. Now she's like a swarm of mosquitoes. And if I don't sort her out, I will die.
So they get into Lynette's place and find Tom in the kitchen making the salad. So Susan leaves them to it, probably like, well, I guess Lynette was just being overdramatic as usual.
Yeah, I know. She's like, oh my God, Lynette's just looking for attention again.
God, what a fucking drama queen. Tom says he went out to get the oranges for the salad as she asked him to do it yesterday, which is why she was confused as she asked him to do it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and then she asks about the suitcase and he says he put it in the closet.
She didn't even check the closet, girl.
Well, I don't blame her. It was pretty sad. It looks like she wants to discuss this further, but instead she just says that she'll get the forks as people will be arriving soon.
Mm.
Although with a little bit more context as to what happens later, the look that she's giving, like, she looks like she wants to discuss it further, but really that's not what she's thinking at all.
No.
So later, Lynette asks Tom what he was doing when he left, as it doesn't take hours to pick up some oranges.
No, it really doesn't.
And he says that he was leaving her.
Oh, so he was moving out.
So he did lie about
the closet. It wasn't in the closet. Yeah.
She asks why he came back, and he says it felt wrong to just leave her like that with her friends asking why she showed up alone and having to lie.
Damn straight.
Lynette then professes that him leaving her was her biggest fear, and when she saw what he did, she thought about Paige's car seat and how they're going to have to get a new one and how inconvenient it was. And she didn't feel devastated. She felt something else. And then when he came back, she realized that she had been feeling relief that he left.
It's so sad. Like, that moment you realize your biggest fear really wasn't something that frightening to you at all. Like, it was all built up in your head. And you're terrified of being left. But then when you are, you're just kind of relieved that it's finally happened and you don't need to be scared anymore.
Yeah, which is kind of nice in a way. Like, I guess I wasn't actually, I didn't have too much to worry about, but it's also like, oh shit, that's a bit depressing.
It's kind of almost like an I told you so moment to yourself.
Yeah,
like, oh, I always knew one day he would leave me. I told myself this, and here we are.
Like, so scared. You've been worrying about your whole life and you didn't need to. I guess it's kind of like when people come out at really old ages.
Yeah.
So Tom asks when they should tell people, but Lynette says after the party because it's Susan's night. And then Tom says they should tell the kids first.
Yeah. And then Lynette was like, oh God, the kids. So bitch couldn't even remember her own kids and she's got like 12 of them.
Well, Lynette's become very self-centered over this season.
She really has.
In fact,
she?
Like, Lynette's become very unlikable in a lot of moments.
Unlikable? Unlikable.
Now let's move on to Gabby's story. Gabby looks out the window and sees, to her horror, her creepy stepfather watching her from his car. She grabs her gun, but she's distracted by Susan knocking on the front door, wanting to say hi after returning to the lane, but Gabby fobs her off, saying that she was just about to go out. She then returns to the window to see that her stepfather is gone.
I just think it's funny how the minute Gabby finds out Alejandro is back, he stops hiding and his stalking becomes so brazenly obvious. Like, now he's just sat there in his car on the street, right outside, broad daylight. Like,
I just want to ask why she doesn't talk to the police.
Yeah. Oh, we find out later.
Yeah. So later, Gabby's in her car, and in her mirror, she sees the stepfather watching from his car behind her.
He's really awful at stalking all of a sudden.
Yeah, why? He's making it very... I think he's trying to scare her.
Yeah.
She drives off, being followed by the guy, and pulls up somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and leaves the car with her gun in her pocket. And he follows her into the woods, but she manages to sneak up on him so that they can have a talk with her in control.
Mm.
He claims that he started a rumor that he was dead and no one checked because it's a small town. But when she went back to the hometown with all of these claims and these stir-ups that she was doing, it was like she was starting another witch hunt.
Yeah, basically, like, and it's implied that if Gabby hadn't have gone back to Las Colinas, then he wouldn't be here confronting Gabby about it. So really, everything that happens from here on out is the fault of Gabby's therapist.
This is all a bit nuts, though. It's like, you've spread a rumor that you're dead. Why do you care?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Oh, because he didn't spread that rumor in Las Colinas.
Oh, somewhere else.
He said he spread a rumor 1,000 miles away and nobody checks. I think he's implying that he made sure to spread that rumor around where Gabby lives, which kind of implies that he's known where Gabby is this entire time.
I guess he's worried that people are going to find out about him being alive.
Yeah, pretty much.
So she does have him down at gunpoint, but instead of shooting him, she leads him back to his car and she basically tells him to fuck off and carry on being dead.
Yeah, and she should have killed him.
So he drives off and she's left alone and she vomits.
Which, no surprise, really.
Like, I'm sure a lot she of must people... have been full of adrenaline.
Yeah. Like, you should have killed him. I know it wouldn't really have done her much good to then resort to murder because of this man, but people like him don't take well to this level of humiliation.
I guess I know what you mean. Like, for her own safety, she should have killed him, but yeah, for her own mental well-being, I don't think it would have helped.
No, it wouldn't have. Yeah, like I said, this, for him, for Alejandro, this would have been humiliating.
Yeah.
And people like him don't react well to humiliation. He's gone. He's gone right now to lick his wounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't be over because people, for people like him, it's never over.
Yeah. So Gabby and Carlos are talking about the party and Carlos doesn't want to go because Bree's going to be there.
Oh, let it go, man.
He then goes into the walk-in wardrobe and finds Gabby's gun. And when he asks about it, she tells him that her stepfather came around. He asks if she did anything, but she says that she didn't, but she was close. They then hug and he tells her that he would have shot the man right there like a dog after what he did to her.
Oh, Gabby doesn't need you now, Carlos. She's a dangerous girl.
Right? Are we playing that sting as well?
Sure.
Hell yeah.
I'm a dangerous girl.
Give her a gun and Gabby's all fucking Lara Croft.
Oh yeah, taking no prisoners. Well, actually, she did let him go, but she's still a dangerous girl.
She is a dangerous girl, yeah. She shot that tree. She showed him.
So Gabby leaves Bree's house after Susan's speech to get the dessert ready before everyone arrives at her place. And as she walks in, her stepfather gives her a bit of a jump scare and tells her that he's got her gun. He tells her that he got 15 minutes out of town, but couldn't stop thinking about how much of a monster Gabby made him out to be. And that she said she was a virgin, which he laughs at because apparently she would walk around in short little skirts and dress like a slut.
Which therefore means that she is one.
What a product of the time.
Yeah, I know. Like, just, and during all of this, Gabby's like begging him to stop.
Right? She's like, she's probably thinking like, please just fuck off.
And like, it's such an uncomfortable scene. Like, it makes me feel so gross. And I can't imagine how it is to watch for people that have been in a situation like that.
Yeah, this next bit's gross. She tries to leave, but he pushes her down onto the sofa, which Carlos sees from outside, and he tries to climb on top of her, but Carlos whacks him over the head with a candlestick.
Yeah, it wasn't so much what he was doing, which is gross, don't get me wrong. It was what he was saying.
Right.
About how, like, she, you know, he used to cover her mouth when she was younger so that the mum couldn't hear how much she enjoyed it. And it was, oh, it was so vile. And we're very lucky that for us, the worst that we get is a feeling of uncomfortableness.
Mm.
Like, we're so lucky. But yes, Carlos.
Gabby tries to tell Carlos about everything that just happened and says that they need to call the police. But to Carlos's horror, the guy is dead. She says it was self-defense as he had the gun, but Carlos tells her that he put the gun back in the safe. And when they search him, they find that in fact, he didn't have the gun and he was lying.
He lied, yeah, like he didn't have the gun at all. Yeah, earlier in the scene, he did say like, I don't think you'd be as strong without your gun. And he like put his hand, it was clearly obvious he didn't have the gun. Like, if I had the gun, I'd be patting it or pretending to pat it instead of just like, he slides his hand into like the front of lapel of his jacket almost. And he's like, without your gun. And I'm like, that isn't how a person would touch a gun. It was so weird.
But you're not going to call him out.
No, you're not.
No, you don't want to get shot.
I'm not going to sit there and be like, you liar. You don't have a fucking gun.
Yeah, you don't have a gun. Fuck off. Pig.
So, slap pig.
Carlo says that he's killed him. Oh, no, that's jumping ahead.
Yeah, don't jump the gun.
Ugh. This is when the ladies, Bree, Lynette and Susan, walk in and see the dead guy. Carlo says that he killed him. Bree tries to say that the police will understand, but Gabby says that she never told the police about him.
Bree looks amazing. Like, I know that's not the point of the scene.
Okay.
But she does, and I feel like it needs to be said.
I mean, she does look amazing, but why didn't Bree? No, not Bree. Why didn't Gabby tell the police about all of this stuff and the stalking and all that?
Because she didn't report Alejandro for sexual assault back when she was younger.
Okay, but does that matter right now?
I mean, really, all Alejandro would have said is, oh yeah, I'm just her stepfather.
Mm.
Like, and it wouldn't go anywhere because there's been no prior.
But then I'd be like,
but
he's stalking me. But then again, the police won't do anything.
No, the police won't. The police wouldn't. So, Gabby's basically argument is that nothing can now happen, really, because she didn't report Alejandro for the sexual assault when she was younger.
Which we can blame on the nun.
Yeah, it just happened and Gabby ran away from home and built a new life. And so from the eyes of the law, Carlos has killed an unarmed man in their house who is also a relation to Gabby. And so therefore that kind of gives him reason to be in the house, at least from a law perspective, until you delve a bit deeper.
This is when they all notice that the rest of the party are coming down the street right now, including Bree's boyfriend, the detective.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos says that he's going to go to prison for protecting his wife, and if he has to, he will. But Bree says that's not going to happen, and they all exchange some horrified looks for a moment, but Bree's so determined and pretty.
There's a really great shot in this scene that I don't even know if it was supposed to be intentional because they didn't linger on it for very long. And I kind of hope it was intentional. And if not, I'm just reading too much into it. But when Carlos says, you know, I'm going to go to prison. Like, I killed an unarmed man. Gabby backs away and says, this is bad. This is really bad. And she backs away into the view, like into the shot with the other ladies. And you see all four of the girls standing on one side of Alejandro and Carlos standing on the other side of Alejandro, which is just such a good shot of showing that the girls are all going to stick by Gabby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all sticking with Gabby with this. It was such a well done shot, but it was only for a brief second. Like, the shot was literally so fleeting that it made me think maybe it wasn't purposefully done.
I think they probably did want a shot of all the ladies together for the final episode, though.
Mm.
Especially with such determination for this moment.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the ending.
Yes.
We cut to a little bit later and everyone is enjoying Gabby's part of the party, drinking and eating, and Chuck tells Bree that he's glad he came and that he likes her friends. Bree says that she's glad before noticing blood on the candlestick right in front of him, so she picks it up very casually, wiping off saying, strawberry sauce gets everywhere.
In like Disney villain mode, like Bee originally said.
Because then she gives this little smile right afterwards and I was like, okay, so Bree should play like a Disney villain. Like, she would be amazing.
Psychopath right there. The fact that she can see the blood on that candlestick and she's talking to a police, like, detective boyfriend, and she just picks it up so casually, wipes it off and smiles at him. Psychopath, like, there's no tomorrow.
She doesn't break at all. It's really good because she did it so casually, so there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Mary Alice then narrates about the things that bind friends together, such as sharing a laugh over an embarrassing incident, as Lynette hands Chuck a drink, comforting each other in times of need, and the camera pans to Lee comforting Renee, finding in our hearts to forgive, and the camera pans to Bree bringing Carlos a slice of cake as he sort of holds her leg in this sort of friendly, accepting kind of way. And then she says, but the things that bind friends together the most is a secret that changes everything. And we pan to the final thing we see of the whole episode, which is of the case that the dead body is stored in.
Ooh.
Which is very Rope-inspired moment.
It
like,
is.
That shot. And then I also got a lot of Cluedo kind of vibes, like he was killed in this room and with the candlestick, but there was also a gun, and it's like all these mysterious elements.
That's true as well, yeah.
So that was fun.
It was, yeah. And look, Carlos and Bree are friends again now.
I didn't really get it when Mary Alice said the thing that binds friends together the most is a secret that changes everything. I thought, that's really depressing. Like, that's the thing that are binding friends together. I feel bad for that friendship group. They're like, oh, I can never not be friends with that person. They know too much about me now.
Well, that's why most people remain friends, let's face it.
I know. Like, oh, Mary Alice, you're so depressing. Go away.
Oh, God.
And that ends the episode, setting up the mystery for the next season, which they normally do at the end of every season. And I think this was the best one.
The best what, sorry?
The best setup for a mystery of another season at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Like, season one ended with just some people moving in. Big whoop. Like, this, I think this was the best mystery setup. It was a good way to set up a season.
It was. And like the dude from EW says, it does harken back to the earlier seasons of Desperate Housewives, where there is one big mystery that connects all four women very strongly and not loosely.
Yeah, although I don't mind seasons where they're not all connected so strongly in a way, because otherwise I really don't think they'd be friends for much longer if every season they all had this horrible mystery connecting all of them in such a way.
Oh yeah, no, they so did it in a smart way. They didn't like overuse that same kind of pattern over and over and over and over again, but it's nice to go back to the basics, like back to the beginning.
And that ends the episode.
And that ends the season.
So let's move on to our next segment, where Joel's going to give us the gayest and the straightest moment of the episode, the final one for season 7.
Yes. So my award for gayest moment I know y'all aren't going to like me for this, but I'm giving it to Alejandro.
For what?
For knowing what a halter top is.
What's a halter top?
Exactly. My point.
What?
It's a top. I don't know what top it is.
Okay, well,
I couldn't tell you. I'm not that much of a fashion
girly. But the fact
that
he knows like the types of top other than just t-shirt and polo is a lot for me.
The fact that he can tell what the different types of female tops are. But yeah, that in that scene in the woods where he's like talking to Gabby, and it's like you used to walk around in those halter tops and those short skirts or whatever, and I was like, bitch, that's what a halter top is.
well earned. So, his fashion knowledge is off the charts, and with his little hat.
Well done. Yeah, I know, right? Which I have a hat quite similar, I think, actually. It's quite scary. So well done, Alejandro.
And then what do you have for the straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment. I'm giving it to Renee. She gives drunk straight girl that meets a guy at the club and then plans her whole future with him. And ladies, there's always one of you in the group. And if you know who that is, great. And if you don't know who that is, well, it's you.
There's always the friend that is never single. And it always seems to be a straight person. I'm pretty sure it's never a gay person, is it?
Well, no, because people...
We struggle to even get into relationships at all, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not that gay people are seriously committed and will put their whole being into a relationship. It's that gay people don't hang around long enough for it to be a relationship. And we'll just go out, do who we want, and then come back and be like, yeah, we're done. On to the next person.
Yeah, in terms of stereotypes, that is correct.
Yeah.
Which is what this whole segment's about. So
yeah. And so now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
So my I don't have one. I'm not even going to play it.
Oh, okay. Well, there wasn't really any parenting, to be fair, was there?
No, not really. I was like, I haven't got a clue.
What I did want to say was, where were the kids in this episode?
I don't know.
With the progressive dinner party, you're going from house to house. None of them had children.
Because the only time I actually thought about it was when Lee was looking after Renee so much. And I was like, where's your daughter?
Where's your daughter? Yeah.
Where's Francesca?
And like, where's MJ? Because Mike is here with Susan. And so is Karen and Roy. And they're like the resident babysitters.
I certainly hope they're not just all in their beds while you're swanning off to these different houses.
Maybe they asked some of Lynette's older kids to babysit.
Maybe.
Anyway, who do you have for the worst parent of the episode?
My award for
Worst parent of the episode.
To the surprise and the chagrin of no one, I gave this to Alejandro.
Okay, yeah.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons we don't really need to delve into, really.
Well, mostly in this one, it's for calling Gabby a slut.
Oh.
Saying that she dresses like a little slut.
He's just inside that cabinet like, you're a slut.
Yeah, right? I was like, so rude. So rude.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't believe this attitude.
And also, Gabby didn't wear halter tops.
I don't even know what that is, but I'll take your word for it.
I can't even Google it. We don't have any Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we have no internet right now. So that was Season 7, Episode 23, Come On Over For Dinner, the finale of Season 7.
Indeed.
If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review, and you can find us on Twitter at Boyfriends Review, and you can find us on Reddit at Boyfriends Review Pod.
And we also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com. The podcast artwork is done by Louis, who you can find on Instagram at docredmuckdesign, where there's an Etsy page and he does commissions. And as that was the final episode for Season 7, I guess we'll see you when we see ya. And the next time we'll be in your ear holes is with Season 8, Episode 1, the final season.
The final season, yeah.
Secrets That I Never Wanted to Know.
Yes.
What a fab title.
We'll take a little break just to let ourselves get settled in, and we're going away for a week as well. So,
yeah, it's the end of the season, which in itself calls for a rest from podcasting.
Exactly.
But we have just moved.
Yes. So, and I know it feels like we're harping on about it, and we are really, because it's all over our social media right now. So
but we're tired.
We're tired, and we'll stop talking about it soon, I promise. But yeah, so we're just going to have a little break, and then we'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye, guys.